The story of Adam and Eve is one of the most iconic stories of the Bible. And last week, a seminary classmate of mine posted a meme about Adam and Eve on his Instagram page. And it said, if Adam and Eve had been Cajun, instead of eating the apple, they would have eaten the snake, thereby saving all of us a whole lot of trouble. That might be my favorite Adam and Eve joke that I've ever heard. But when we look deeply into the story of Adam and Eve, we discover that their story and other stories in Genesis are really stories about us. For instance, where was the Garden of Eden? If this is a story that's only about two archetypal characters in the book of Genesis, then we would say that the setting for the Garden of Eden is near the Tigris and Euphrates rivers, which is what the text suggests. But if the story is about me, I can tell you precisely where the Garden of Eden is located. It's at 3207 Donegal Road in El Paso, Texas. And the year was not 4004 BCE. It was sometime in the fall of 1979. I was 10 years old, almost 11. My parents had decided that I was old enough to be left at home by myself for a couple of hours. And that was just enough time. Those 2 hours were just enough time for a scientific experiment to go horribly wrong. I was curious about the flammability of Kleenex tissue, and I quickly found out. The tissue immediately became a fireball. I dropped it out of fear. It singed the carpet. I stomped it out. And I wondered how on earth I was going to explain all of this to my parents. It could have been a cigarette burn for my father, but this was bigger than a cigarette burn. So I just had no idea how I was going to explain it. And I was embarrassed. Here I had given in to that stereotype about children being left alone and playing with fire. And I was utterly embarrassed. And so I went to my bedroom, and I decided that I could pretend to be asleep. Maybe I fell asleep while reading a book, and so that's what I did. When my parents came home, I continued to pretend that I was sleeping. And then finally, I heard my mother's voice saying, Jack, where are you? You see, this ancient story is really a story about all of us. The word Adam in Hebrew is the word Adam, meaning the human. And the word Eve means the mother of the living. This is an archetypal story about what it means to be human. It's a story about you and me. Now, the traditional Christian interpretation of the story, going back to at least St. Augustine in the early 5th century, is that it's a story about how sin came into the world. In Augustine's mind, Adam and Eve sinned in the worst possible way, because they only had to remember one thing, just one thing. Don't eat from this one tree. You and I have to remember all kinds of things to refrain from sin. I mean, the list of potential sins is rather long. But Adam and Eve only had to remember that one thing to keep from sinning, and they blew it. They did it anyway. And for Augustine, this was horrible. And for him, it was how sin came into the world. Now, the traditional Jewish interpretation in the rabbinical history of interpretation is that it's a story not so much about how sin came into the world as it is a story about human self-consciousness. Once upon a time, we were like children, naked but unashamed, trusting and unafraid. We were like a two-year-old after his bath, romping gleefully through the living room, free of that unnatural restraint called clothing. In the beginning, says Genesis, we were unself-conscious and we had the trusting simplicity of children. But we quickly became aware of limits. You are free to enjoy the garden, only stay away from that tree over there. And as one commentator explains, the tree of the knowledge of good and evil is a tree of limits. For what makes us different from God is that we don't always know what is good, whereas God does, because we're not God. We live with limits. And life itself has its limits. We don't know everything. We will die someday, and one of the things that we don't know is when we will die, And once we were naked and unashamed, but then we became naked and afraid. And we realized that we were way more vulnerable than we'd ever care to admit. And I find myself holding on to both Augustine's view of the story and the traditional Jewish view. What I learned from St. Augustine is that choices have consequences, and sometimes those consequences are tragic. Leaving a loaded gun where a four-year-old can find it, drinking and driving, words spoken in anger that destroy a relationship, the mounting casualties from the wars in Gaza and Ukraine, or how the approaching 23rd anniversary of 9/11 reminds us that we still live in a dangerous world. These are some of the many things that St. Augustine's reading helps remind me. And what I learned from the traditional Jewish interpretation is that there are times in life when on the surface everything seems to be going well. I'm sitting on a couch in my living room, very relaxed, and suddenly out of nowhere, I catch a glimpse of my own mortality. And once again, I am naked and afraid. And this week, we have once again been angered and saddened by yet another school shooting, this time at Appalachee High School in Georgia. Two teachers and two students were killed, nine others injured. A son and a father have now both been arrested and charged for their complicity in those killings. And several years ago, in the immediate aftermath of another tragic shooting, the author Anne Lamott posted this on her Facebook account. She wrote, "Life has always been scary here. And we have always been as vulnerable as kittens. Plagues and Visigoths, snakes and schizophrenia, Cain is still killing Abel, and nature means that everyone dies. I hate this. It's too horrible for words. When my son was 7 and found out that he and I would not die at the exact same second, he said, crying, 'If I had known this, I would not have agreed to be born.'" And perhaps you too have felt that way at many times. And whether you find Augustine or the traditional Jewish view more persuasive, there are times for all of us when we feel naked and afraid. But the good news for all of us who do feel naked and afraid is that there is a voice that calls to us, a voice that says, "Where are you?" in the midst of our deepest loneliness. And it's that same voice that moved over the surface of the waters and said, "Let there be light." And there was light. It's the same voice that cried out, "Let there be mountains and oceans, aardvarks and elephants." And then there were mountains and oceans and aardvarks and elephants. And every time the voice cried out, creation responded. And that same voice cries out to us, "Where are you?" And there's a hopeful expectation on God's part that we will respond. Now, I invite you, if you will, to close your eyes for just a moment and listen. Listen for the sound of God walking in the garden in the evening breeze. And now listen for a voice. Listen for a voice that says, "Where are you?" Now, what tone of a voice do you hear in those words? Is it a menacing voice of someone determined to do you harm? To someone determined to catch you in the act of doing something wrong so they can heap shame and ridicule upon you? Is that the voice you hear? Or is it the voice of a loving mother looking for her son who's hiding in the bedroom under the covers? Do you hear that loving voice calling your name, just as the creation itself was called for by the voice of God? In the words of the late Rabbi Jonathan Sacks, who was an English Orthodox rabbi and a popular author, he writes that the responsible life is a life that responds. The Hebrew word for responsibility comes from the Hebrew word for other, and God is that great other, calling us to use our God-given freedom to to make the world more like the world that ought to be. And that's also the quote that's on the cover of your bulletin. And in that same Facebook quote that grieved a summer of violence, Anne Lamott offered several practical ways for each of us to take responsibility. She wrote, "I know that we must respond. We must respond with a show of force equal to the violence and tragedies, with love force, mercy force, unnegotiated compassion force, crazy caregiving to the poor and suffering, including ourselves. Patience with a deeply irritating, provocative mother. $2 bills to the extremely annoying guy at the intersection who you think maybe could be working or is going to spend your money on beer. Jesus didn't ask the blind man what he was going to look at after he restored the man's sight. He just gave hope and sight. He just healed. To whom can you give hope and sight today? What about me and disappointing old you? Radical self-care, healthy food, patience, and a friendly tone of voice." As I read Anne's words again, it occurs to me that God models this kind of care for each one of us. A loving voice calls out to Adam and Eve, "Where are you?" And when God learns that Adam and Eve have fashioned for themselves clothing out of fig leaves, which must have had the same comfort level as medium-grade sandpaper, what does God do? God fashions for Adam and Eve clothing out of animal skins. Can you see the progression? From fig leaves to fur coats, God's grace wins out. Or as Anne Lamott says, grace always bats last. Whatever might happen in 8 to 9 innings of life, God always bats last. Now, today is that first Sunday after the Labor Day holiday, and as we mentioned, in many churches, it's a rally day or a homecoming Sunday when the hope is that churchgoers will return to worship, to fellowship with each other. And I hope that we, too, will hear a gentle invitation to be a part of this community of faith, whether we are forming brand new bonds or renewing old bonds or hoping to sustain and strengthen the bonds we currently have. My prayer is that you can hear the healing note in the evening breeze, carrying God's question, "Where are you?" And my answer is that I am here with other disciples of Jesus who are doing their best to follow. I come here not because I have everything together, but because I do not have everything together, not even close. And I am way more vulnerable than I'd care to admit. And I'm painfully aware that I haven't always made the best choices. But I am here because I have heard that loving voice calling out to me, inviting me to become a person of love and responsibility, working alongside you to make this a more just and gracious world. All glory and praise be to our God. Amen.